Call the meeting to order. First off, together with Chairman Leader of the House Transportation Finance Committee, Chairman Hornstein of the Transportation Policy and Oversight Committee, and Chairman Nelson of the Local Government Committee, we'd like to welcome everybody here. I believe that this is one of the largest joint hearings in the history of the House, if not the largest hearing, and I appreciate members' willingness to sit close together. We were wondering if we were going to have to put folks on folding chairs. I volunteered to take the first one, but we appreciate your attendance this afternoon. The purpose of this joint hearing is, and I think the size matches the significance of the issue, is to look at the sale of Northwest Airlines to Delta, which according to Dan McElroy, who is our commissioner at Deed, may be the single or one of the largest economic events in Minnesota history. I would suggest to you, based on what I've heard from Commissioner McElroy and others, that it may well be the single biggest, most devastating economic impact event in the state history. According to Commissioner McElroy, it is along the lines of almost $500 million in economic impact that the loss of jobs, particularly at the corporate headquarters, will have on our state. Delta, specifically what we want to talk about today, is that Delta wants to renegotiate a prior Northwest Airlines agreement that Northwest Airlines entered into with the state of Minnesota and MAC dating back a couple of decades, which has been renegotiated and reworded and reworked over the course of that period of time. Specifically, Delta would like to have the opportunity to not have a headquarters here, to not commit to the same level of jobs, but continue to keep the benefit of a loan that was made of $270 million. Now I believe that figure is about $245 million. We're going to hear today about the proposed terms of a new agreement between the MAC and Northwest Airlines / Delta. Anytime I appear in front of a judge, I kind of like to know that judge's biases, so I'm going to admit to a couple of my own. One is that I am a loyal Northwest customer. My wife will tell you that often it's to my own detriment. We pay more sometimes so that we can fly Northwest, and I always seem to end up between that snoring guy on my right side and the beefy guy
I'm
on my left.
I'm the snoring guy. I'm the
I think that is you. I'm always in the middle seat. My second bias, quite honestly, is I believe that when you make a promise, when you sign your name on a contract, when you shake hands at the end, you ought to keep that promise. And dating back almost two decades ago, Northwest and the state agreed to a set of promises where the state promised over $250 million through its agency, the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and the bondholders who are party to that, and kind of sent a life preserver out to Northwest Airlines. It was in an ocean of debt and in dire situation. Northwest agreed to keep a headquarters, over about 17,000 jobs, and a hub here. Northwest / Delta now wants to renegotiate that and change the terms of it, but keep the benefits of the $270 million loan that was made. And that, quite frankly, doesn't sit real well in my craw, and that's why we started down this course. I appreciate Representative Chairman Hornstein, Chairman Leader, and Chairman Nelson's desire to be here as well. This is a very critical type issue. With that, we have, I'll give you a quick overview of what we're going to, who we're going to have up here today. We've got Tom Pender, who we affectionately call Professor Pender, from the House staff, that is going to walk us through a little bit of a background about what brought us up to today. We've got representatives from the Metropolitan Airports Commission to talk about their perspective on the proposed new arrangement. And finally, we have representatives from Northwest Delta, Mr. Hurst, perhaps others who are coming back before our committee, and we appreciate your attendance here today to talk about Northwest perspective. Finally, there's two bills that have been introduced. We are not going to hear those bills formally, though we are going to have just a brief discussion what those two bills are. We'll then turn for an opportunity to members for questions and answers. If there is additional time, we'll take additional testimony. For anyone that desires to be heard with respect to the bills, These bills are not going to be formally before us today. They will be before our committee perhaps next week or the week after, and there will be plenty of opportunities for additional input at that time as well. With that, that's an overview. Mr. Pender, if you'd join us, and Mr. Pender has been kind enough on a couple of other occasions to provide an overview of the dating back the two decades of what brought us to this point. He does a fine job, and he does it in with brevity. Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chairs and members, I'm Tom Pender from the Health Research Department. I'm going to be speaking from a one-page handout that's been distributed, and I was asked to give a brief 10-minute introduction to the agreements between Northwest and the state and the MAC. This involves many agreements that have been amended several times and involve more than involve probably thousands of pages of documents. I'm not going to discuss them in any detail, and also I'm not going to discuss the current negotiations in detail. I'm going to leave that to the parties involved. My job is to set the stage. And for those of you who are on the Commerce and Labor Committee, this presentation is going to be quite similar to the one I gave last year when I was asked to do roughly the same thing. This all started in 1991 when the legislature approved a financial assistance package for Northwest Airlines. This involved $270 million as a loan from the Metropolitan Airports Commission, which everybody calls the MAC, and also loans from the state for heavy maintenance aircraft facility in Duluth, and financing for an engine repair facility at the Chisholm-Hibbing Airport. As a result of this, in 1992, the MAC issued the $270 million in its general obligation bonds. It sold them to investors, and the general obligation term in there means that the MAC is on the hook for these bonds, and if they don't get paid through Northwest, the MAC would have to assess the property owners in the metro area to pay those. This whole transaction was handled through what's called a sale and leaseback arrangement, and basically this involved this was all sort of done simultaneously, but it involved the MAC taking the $270 million that it got by selling its bonds to investors and using that money to buy a bunch of property and equipment that Northwest owned in or near the airport. So Northwest got the cash, the $270 million, which it needed at the time. And then there was a leaseback arrangement where Northwest leased that same property and equipment back from the MAC, and the lease payments were set to equal the payments that the MAC would need to make on the bonds. So that's how this thing was set up originally, and the MAC now therefore owns that property and equipment at the airport. But the deal provides that Northwest gets the ownership back when the bonds are paid off. So in a way, the MAC sort of is holding that property and equipment kind of as collateral for the loan payments that are supposed to be made. The bonds the MAC issued are 30-year bonds, and so they mature in the year 2022, and they're callable in the year 2012. And callable means that's the first time that the bonds can be paid off early. These agreements between the MAC and Northwest include three what are called public policy covenants, which Representative Atkins already described. They're as follows. First, Northwest has to keep its corporate headquarters in the Twin Cities metro area. It has to maintain a hub at the airport, and that's defined in terms of what percent of passengers are neither originating their flights in the Twin Cities or concluding them, but are using it as a transfer point between aircraft. And also there's there are numbers involving a required number of departing flights. Then the third covenant was that Northwest must maintain a specified level of employment here. These last two covenants, the hub and the level of employment, have been renegotiated several times between the parties. Both of them have been subject to what's called a force majeure clause, meaning that under certain circumstances, Northwest was allowed to not meet those requirements if there were circumstances beyond Northwest's control that prevented, made it impossible or impractical for them to meet them. And the corporate headquarters covenant, there really hasn't been a lot of action on until now, because it's not, it's something that's defined in the agreement. It's hard to put numbers on it. You either have your corporate headquarters here or not, pretty much. There was the penalty specified in the agreement for violation of any of these covenants is immediate payoff, or almost immediate payoff, by Northwest of the MAC bonds. And they're not callable until 2012, so if Northwest had to make the payment before then, that would be put in what's called a defeasance account that the MAC would control and would use to pay off the bonds, either in 2012, or I think they could just keep paying, making the payments of principal and interest until they matured in 2022. The state is not a party to these agreements between Northwest and the MAC, but the agreement provides that the state may enforce it if the state chooses to do that. And that power of the state is also referenced in some 2002 agreements to the lease that I'm not going into detail on here, but concept is in there too. Moving along in history here, in the 1992 to 94 period, Northwest experienced continued financial problems. In 1994, there was a downsizing of the previous agreements on the Duluth and Chisholm-Hibbing project. In 1995, there was a state bond financing provided for a repair facility in Duluth. And also financing was provided for a reservation center in Chisholm by the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. The next major event was in 2005, when Northwest entered Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And probably some of you know what Chapter 11 bankruptcy is. It's named after a chapter in the federal bankruptcy code, and basically it's a way for corporations to try to avoid a liquidation bankruptcy, to try to reorganize, renegotiate their financing, sell off assets, and try to eventually emerge as a healthy corporation, as several other airlines have done over the years. And as a result of the Northwest bankruptcy and the negotiations that went on as part of that, the remaining debt on the Chisholm facility was repaid, the remaining debt on the Duluth facility was repaid, and that was the last debt specifically owed to the state, and payments were continued as scheduled on the loan from the MAC, the $270 million loan, but the lease agreement involving the lease of the property that Northwest sort of sold to the MAC was renegotiated to include some rent reductions and some revenue sharing from food concessions at the airport. So there was kind of a sweetener in there for Northwest as part of the Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which isn't unusual because most creditors often have to make concessions in a Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And coming out of that bankruptcy, and still today, roughly $245 million is owing on the loan from the MAC, as Representative Atkins said. And that number, if you look at it in comparison with the $270 original amount owed on those bonds, and the bonds are, you know, more than halfway through the 30-year period, just kind of as a result of the principal and amortization, just like a mortgage loan. In the early years, you're paying almost entirely interest, and the principal doesn't go down much, and then eventually the principal starts going down faster. The next big event was in 2008. The Northwest entered into the merger agreement with Delta through a purchase by Delta of Northwest stock. Delta basically exchanged its stock with Northwest shareholders and got their stock in exchange. Northwest is still a separate corporation. It's a wholly owned subsidiary of Delta. It still has a license to operate as an airline company. This is partly due to the fact that it's simply taking a while for Delta to integrate Northwest fully in its operations. There's a variety of things to work out. But Delta's made it clear that this situation is not going to last, and within the next couple of years, Northwest is going to be integrated into Delta, and the corporate headquarters of Delta is in Atlanta, and therefore Delta will be violating the corporate headquarters covenant. And in 2009 now, the MAC and Delta have been negotiating, which you're going to hear about later, possibility of an agreement that could resolve these issues created by the merger, basically the breach of the headquarters covenant and the potential need to Delta to make an early payoff of the MAC bonds. Delta would also lose the rent reductions and the food concessions revenue that they got in the Chapter 11 bankruptcy, because those are conditioned on compliance with the covenants, but those are relatively small matters of just a few million dollars a year. So basically what's happening now is that it's clear that the covenant's going to be breached, and Delta and the MAC are trying to work out some sort of an agreement between them that would be preferable for both of them than simply having the covenant breached and having Delta pay off the loan early, which the MAC would then use. MAC would use that money to pay off its bond. So I will stop there and let the parties involved in the negotiations talk about the negotiations.
Thank you, Mr. Pender. Consider the issue officially teed up. I assume you'll stand at the ready. My goal here is to try to get through the testimony from the Metropolitan Airports Commission next and the Northwest Delta, and we'll then take questions. For anybody that hasn't seen it, there should be in your packets an excellent memo that the Metropolitan Airports Commission put together dated January 22nd, summarizing their presentation. Gentlemen, have a seat. But on page 1, 2, and 3, there's somewhat of a spreadsheet or a chart that shows the various options, and that is an excellent way to take a look at the current agreement, the current obligations, and the proposed new agreement. Mr. Hamill, Mr. Anderson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we may, I've got a few introductory remarks, and then General Counsel of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, Tom Anderson, will then pick up and go through the specific aspects and the details of the term sheet that we present to the Commission. First of all, Mr. Chairman and Committee Chairs, thank you very much for the invitation to meet with you today and discuss basically the term sheets and the negotiation process conducted between the Metropolitan Airports Commission and Delta Airlines. The goal of this negotiation process, quite frankly, has been to find an accommodation to look at two opportunities: either enforce the provisions and the strict language of the agreement and demand full payment of the outstanding obligation, or we'll work together to find an avenue or an opportunity that would provide additional future opportunities for this community regarding improved and expanded air service in the future and stabilizing aviation services and so forth in the metropolitan community in the state of Minnesota. We have, over the last year or so, been talking about this issue. Last year, you met Ed Bastin, who is the present CEO of Delta Airlines, who testified as to the intentions of Delta Airlines and consolidation of their world headquarters. There were several sessions, both in the House and the Senate, with briefings and a good bit of question and answer and good dialogue, which showed keen interest on your part and, quite frankly, sent a message to us as negotiators as to what you expect and what you hope will be the outcome of this process. We have continued through the summer and into this fall, briefing legislative leadership on both sides of the legislative body, the Senate and the House. We've tried to keep leadership abreast of the developing issues and the key points of negotiation. The actual process that we followed started primarily in the fall, September of 2008. Up until that time, Northwest Airlines and Delta were working through the Department of Justice process. They can talk about the detail of that, but it was in October of 2008 that the Justice Department determination permitted Delta and Northwest Airlines to consolidate and to become one airline company. We started our negotiation process in September of 2008. with representatives of Northwest / Delta Airlines. Those negotiations went on through the months of September, October, November, and into December. During that time, we attempted to identify and discuss with representatives of the airline all the issues of concern. We talked about the breach potential, we talked about obligations, we talked about the intent of the original agreements, and we began to talk about the future of the Minneapolis-St. Paul market in the state of Minnesota and the impacts that this decision will have on the state. We have briefed our board members at the Metropolitan Airports Commission, of which there are 15 members. We're closely with our chair, Jack Lanner. And we have kept our board abreast of the critical issues, primarily focusing on the areas of hub operations at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, employment covenants, and, of course, the headquarters situation, knowing that as early as last year before the legislature, Delta had informed us that they intended to consolidate and locate the headquarters of Northwest Airlines in Atlanta, Georgia. On December 17th, the commission, we presented to the commission a term sheet. It took us 2.5-3 months to get to that point. The term sheet that we presented from a staff perspective represents what we believe to be the best deal that we could negotiate with Delta Airlines. It represents a consideration of all the issues presented to us in discussions within the legislative group, within the leadership of the House and the Senate. It represents direction we received from our chairman and his participation and interest expressed by our board members. We also invited public testimony and discussion, and that took place on January the 6th. But the bottom line here is that this term sheet, result of 2.5 to 3 months of negotiation, was presented to our board as one complete package, culminating all the issues and all the discussion that took place over the preceding couple of months into a consolidated document of about 5 or 6 pages. This term sheet is not the deal. The term sheet is a conceptual outline of the pieces that will be converted into a legal document once this agreement is formalized and formally voted upon by the Metropolitan Airports Commission. On January 6th, we held our first public meeting. It was about a 3.5-hour discussion. We invited public comment and involvement participation. We had a very good turnout. We had a good bit of dialogue. And I think I could represent that meeting as being one of investigation and of challenge. Several of our board members had significant questions and issues. They asked us to investigate and provide additional new information. We talked with Delta representatives and basically been working on language and terminology and adjustments on this agreement. I will have to tell you that it is our belief and our understanding that the primary elements of the negotiation are fairly well understood by both parties. The language adjustments represent clarification, definition, and some modification, but not significant changes in the original term sheet that was negotiated over the 2.5 months. Our next meeting with our full board is next Monday, January the 26th at 1 o'clock, the commission offices, our headquarters, are in the terminal building. We will fully discuss all of the issues. Delta representatives will be there, and our board will have an opportunity to either continue to ask questions and demand more answers and clarification, or ultimately take a vote at the end of that meeting to accept or to not accept the term sheet, or move to a meeting sometime in later January, early February. For us, let me just give you a bit of opinion and some observation on what's at stake here. The airline industry, and I'm certain everyone in this room is aware of this, but since the Deregulation Act of 1978 was passed by the U.S. Congress, this has been a dynamic industry in continuous change and turmoil. Since 1978, 173 airline companies, this is as of December of 2008, 173 airline companies have filed bankruptcy, the most of which have disappeared and no longer exist. Names like TWA and Pan Am and Eastern and Western, and the list is very, very long, no longer exist. This is a dynamic, continuously changing industry and one that has great impact on our national economy and our transportation connectivity for this country. Minneapolis-St. Paul has enjoyed being the home and headquarters of Northwest Airlines since 1926, or within a year or so of that time, depending on when you want to call the start date of the airline. We've enjoyed remarkable air service, and we, quite frankly, going into this discussion, this negotiation, intend to maintain the highest levels of employment, the highest levels of air service that we can negotiate for this community. The reality is that we have been able to have a relatively stable, competitive marketplace. At one point in time, historically, we were the home of four airline companies based in Minnesota. Sun Country, Champion Air, North Central, and Northwest. Through the consolidation and the development of the industry, that is now consolidated down to Sun Country, which is currently in bankruptcy, and Northwest Airlines becoming Delta Airlines as part of this merger. And part of the challenge that we've been facing for the last 3.5 to 4 months is this whole issue of the headquarters. What we have done is basically put together what we think to be a negotiation process and a term sheet that maintains Minneapolis-St. Paul as an important, significant part of a Delta Airlines national, international, domestic, international market. We believe that the agreements that we have negotiated are agreements that basically provide an opportunity for both the airline industry and the state of Minnesota to enjoy continued high-quality air service with frequencies, quite frankly, that no community of our size and population enjoys anyplace else in the United States. More nonstop flights today out of Minneapolis-St. Paul than any other community in America on a per capita basis. We believe that the level of high-frequency flights to direct local destinations, we believe the levels of employment, in spite of the fact there have been dramatic cuts in employment across the entire industry, provide security and opportunity for us in the future. At the end of the day, what we've done is develop a term sheet that we think positions us for growth as the economy recovers and Delta Airlines makes decisions to grow. And we believe that this is a platform that permits us to be part of the success and the future growth of Delta Airlines. With that, let me turn the discussion to our Chief Counsel, Tom Anderson, who will take you through the key points of the negotiation, the term sheet, from our perspective. And then whenever Mr. Shea would like, you can ask questions and covers, we'd be happy to respond to whatever issues you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Hamill. Well, Mr. Anderson, fortunately, you do have a reputation for being concise, and we appreciate that. My goal, folks, is to, between your testimony and Mr. Hurst's testimony on behalf of Northwest Delta, to conclude that by 5:30. So that's about a half an hour to walk through the high points of the negotiated proposed agreement. We'll then turn to an opportunity for members to ask questions of Northwest Delta, the MAC, or Mr. Pender if they want to. Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom Anderson, General Counsel of the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Mr. Chair, as I think you pointed out, the choice facing the Airports Commission as they enter this period of time is whether to enforce the covenants that have been negotiated on behalf of the state and the airport, or to use those covenants as leverage to negotiate a new agreement. As Mr. Pender indicated, there are several public policy covenants that have been identified in the past and that continue to be important, I think, to the interests of the state. If you look at the 1991 loan transaction that Mr. Pender referenced, there are three sets of covenants that I think are important. And then if you look at the bankruptcy negotiations that took place in 2007, there are two additional covenants. So a total of five covenants, some of which are overlapping. The 1991 covenants are an employment covenant, a hub covenant, and a headquarters covenant. And those were negotiated with a great deal of legislative involvement but ultimately with the direction to the Airports Commission to use its best judgment to negotiate covenants on behalf of the interests of the state and the airport. Then, as also Mr. Pender also indicated, in 2007, after the bankruptcy filing of Northwest, we were faced with a different set of issues. Challenges, and as we all, I think, understand in the context of a bankruptcy, the need for every creditor to look at the risks associated with a bankruptcy and the obligation to look at potential restructuring of all the financial arrangements. And we did enter into restructuring of our leases at the airport that govern Northwest's right to use the airport, resulting in a significant rent reductions to Northwest and, in fact, to all the other airlines at the airport, but in exchange for additional public policy covenants, a covenant, to keep the headquarters and the hub of the airline in the state. As you have heard before, Northwest has been acquired by Delta. It is a wholly owned subsidiary of Delta, but continuing to operate today as a separate entity. Airlines are regulated by the U.S. Department of Transportation, and they operate under operating certificates from the DOT. And those separate operating certificates can only be merged with DOT approval. So for the next 12 to 24 months, Northwest will continue to operate as a separate legal entity and essentially a separate airline. And only through this process of integration will it at some point cease to exist. That means for purposes of these discussions that at least it is my view that Northwest is continues to be in compliance with the covenants that it has issued today. It still is operating with its headquarters in the Twin Cities. It is still in compliance with the headquarters covenant today. So the only question is, in the future, as jobs, as are expected, continue to be transferred out of the Twin Cities to Atlanta, at some point there will be a breach of that headquarters covenant, and these issues will become present, and we'll have to deal with. So we've attempted. So I wanted to put that in context because I do not think we have a breach today. It's something we've anticipated and tried to deal with prospectively, proactively, because Delta is in fact making decisions today about where to locate employees, where to deploy its assets. And those decisions, once made, are hard to reverse. And so it was felt that as those decisions are being made, it was our goal really to accomplish three objectives. One, to secure the hub here. I think we all understand the importance of the air service, as Mr. Hamill mentioned. Second, to secure as much employment and as much of the headquarters employment as we reasonably could. And then third, to look at financial adjustments that could be made to the arrangements that we have that could increase protection to the taxpayers, and compensate the airport for this change in the business environment that Delta would be operating in, with their headquarters, at least some point in the future, no longer here. Now, our paper looked at some of these financial consequences. The potential breach of the headquarters covenant under the 1991 loan would mean the acceleration of about $240 million of debt. Debt that Northwest is required to repay, but scheduled out between now and 2020. And under the terms of this agreement, they would be required to pay that money essentially in the next 2 years, or 2 years after the headquarters breach would occur. It's important to note here that this money would be collected and retained by MAC and paid over to the bondholders in its entirety. So there would be no net financial gain to the state or to MAC by the acceleration of this loan. It would simply relieve us of the contingent liability, if you will, of the potential that we might have to pay off these bonds in the event Northwest or Delta did not pay them off. And that's really the sole consequence under the 1991 agreement. Very clearly written that's the exclusive remedy that is available. That's been a condition of these public policy covenants from the beginning, that the exclusive remedy for breach of any of them is these very specific financial provisions that were negotiated, essentially acceleration, either in whole or in part, of the rent payments that they're making. Under the 2000, so that's the 1991 agreement. The 2007 agreement, where we reduced rent for the airlines, includes a snapback provision in the event of a breach of the headquarters covenant. In terms of concessions, revenue sharing, that means approximately $8 million a year to Delta that they get in the form of reduced rent. And in terms of a hangar that they lease from us, it's about $1.9 million a year of reduced rent that they received in exchange for the commitment to keep both the headquarters and the hub in the Twin Cities. So after several months of negotiation, we looked at these covenants, we looked at these financial rights, we looked at the interests that we felt were at stake, and fashioned an agreement that balanced what are essentially competing interests, balancing the importance of the hub against the jobs, against the money, if you will. And a fashioned agreement that has now been reduced to the form of a term sheet that you have before you. It's being presented to our board on Monday, as was indicated, and we expect that our board could take action on it on Monday. And if they do, per the terms of the term sheet, we would then be directed to finalize binding legal documents that would implement the terms of this term sheet and present them back to our board for the board's approval, perhaps as early as February 4th. So that is the timetable that we are operating under. In terms of the specific deal, which has not been referenced, I think it breaks down into several different parts as outlined on this paper. First of all, the hub covenant. There would be a dramatic increase in the hub covenant. The 1991 agreement set the hub covenant at 187 flights per day. That's far below the current activity. The new agreement, if it were to be approved, would set that number substantially higher from 400 flights per day, which is approximately the activity level of the airline operating today. And in addition, it would break out between large airplanes and small airplanes so that of those 400 flights, at least 250 of which would have to be with aircraft of greater than 70 seats. So a dramatic increase in the hub covenant from what's in place today, either under the 1991 agreement or the 2007 bankruptcy negotiation had a definition of the hub covenant, which had a slightly higher level of activity than was set in 1991. The employment covenant, as indicated, would go down dramatically from the 17,000 today to 10,000. And there's been a lot of discussion about that. And as we understand it, Northwest's current activity as of last year was at about 13,600, but there has been continued consolidation in the industry even in this last year, and it is substantially below that level at this point. So clearly there is a reduction in employment, not in many cases not caused by the merger or but simply by shrinking of the airline, consolidation of the industry, automation, outsourcing, a number of pressures that have been on the airline, obviously that forced them into bankruptcy and have allowed them to try to continue to operate outside of bankruptcy since they emerged last in 2007. Finally, the next major point is that we've identified several specific functions within Delta Airlines that they would agree to locate in Minnesota for the period of the bonds. This would be a hard commitment for 3 years, and after 3 years, those could change if they were to outsource the whole function. And those I won't list those in all their detail, but they're listed on our cover page. But the Mesaba, and Compass Airlines, two of the commuter airlines that are regional affiliates of Delta, would be located in Minnesota. Mesaba is here today, and they would be required to stay here. But Compass is currently based in the state of Virginia, and they would be moving that headquarters and the people associated with that job from Virginia to Minnesota as a result of this agreement. Similarly, the overall management of these regional airlines is done within the corporate structure of Delta in Atlanta today, and those functions would be moved from Atlanta to Minneapolis. There would be, and the remainder of the points that are listed are essentially keeping what we have: reservation centers in Chisholm in the Twin Cities, a data center in Eagan that's a very important part of the Northwest operation would continue to be, the pilot training center, NATCO, where they train their pilots, and the various other elements that are listed. Yeah. Finally, there are financial adjustments as a result of all of this, essentially to balance out the reductions and the increases that I just mentioned in the hub and the headquarters. The GO bonds would be paid off early by September of 2016, as opposed to 2022, which is the current arrangement. The rent on the building C hangar that I mentioned earlier would be increased by $500,000 a year immediately, and another $500,000 on top of that in 2015. And Delta would commit to maintaining substantial participation in civic and nonprofit involvement in the state, which has always been an element of Northwest's presence, and I think one of the things you get with the headquarters. And Delta said, even though we're moving this headquarters, we will maintain that same level of civic involvement. So what we have are some options, and I listed those in this options at a glance piece, and it's essentially to attempt to enforce the covenants as they are today, or work under a new agreement that we've negotiated here. And it's our considered judgment on the part of our staff that we have negotiated the best deal we can for the state. We're recommending it to our board, and our board will be acting on that recommendation next week.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate that. The just one quick question: the job agreement that and the new proposal would be for 3 years. That's the ironclad portion of it. After that, though, there'd be some exceptions to that. Is that correct understanding?
Mr. Chair, the employment covenant would remain of 10,000 employees would remain through as long as the bonds are outstanding. So that 10,000 stays throughout. The specific delta functions that are listed here would also remain throughout as long as the bonds are outstanding. But after 3 years, if the entire function were being outsourced, for example, if the airline decided to get out of the reservation center business completely, they could then, as part of that complete outsourcing, get out of the specific commitments to keep the reservation centers in the Twin Cities and Chisholm.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Hamill. Mr. Hurst, welcome back. We've been joined by some friends this time. Other members of some committees, but I look forward to your perspective with respect to the agreement as well.
Well, thank you very much, Chairman Atkins. I'm happy to be back, and I hope I can answer any questions that you have. And I do think, honestly, that this is a very good agreement for the state of Minnesota. And I hope to explain why that is. My name is Ben Hurst. I'm the general counsel at Delta Airlines, formerly general counsel at Northwest. And I want to thank you, Chairman Atkins, Chairman Hornstein, Chairman Leader, and Chairman Nelson, and members of the four committees for allowing me to appear before you today to discuss the benefits of the proposed agreement between the MAC and the Northwest. As Tom said, now a wholly owned subsidiary of Delta. I do have a statement. I'll go through it as quickly as possible because I know that people are eager to ask questions and then move on to more important things like the Purdue-Minnesota basketball game this afternoon. Stepping back for a moment, and there's a number of people alluded to today, this is a nasty business, the airline business. It's a very difficult business. It faces constant turmoil and financial challenges. And as everybody in Minnesota is aware, since 1990, possibly earlier, Northwest communities and employees have been repeatedly put at risk of losing their service and their jobs because of events that have affected this business, such as the Gulf War, the recession of the early 90s, the dot-com market crash, the recession that followed in this century, 9/11, SARS, avian flu, and last summer oil prices that reached $147 a barrel, which if sustained would have eliminated Northwest Airlines as a functioning entity in a fairly short period of time. This inherent instability in our industry, we feel, created unacceptable levels of uncertainty and risk for our employees, as well as our customers and our communities. And we began exploring merger possibilities to attempt to put the airline in safer harbor last year as oil prices, actually in late 2007, as oil prices began to approach $100, because even at those levels, the impact was unsustainable on Northwest Airlines. Our objective was to find a merger partner that would put us on a much safer footing for our employees and our communities. And we believe we found that. The merger with Delta was approved in October by the Department of Justice, and the resulting company is today much more financially resilient, much stronger, and much better able to sustain our jobs and sustain our service than either airline would have been on a standalone basis. The combination creates a single stronger airline by combining two end-to-end networks, and we are on the way to achieving $2 billion in annual cost and revenue synergies that will benefit our employees by making the jobs more secure and our communities by making the service patterns that people have described more secure, including the considerable level of nonstop service from Minneapolis that that Jeff Hamill alluded to. Since we announced the merger in April of last year, the economy, as we all know, has taken a dramatic turn for the worse. After oil prices spiked, we, along with other airlines, reduced capacity by about 10%. We announced voluntary early out programs to, again, attempt to avoid furloughs, involuntary furloughs. And we're continuing to see declines as a result of economic conditions in revenue at our airline and others. We're projecting declines of revenue in 2009 in the 8-12% range, which is the worst economic picture that our industry has seen since 9/11. And while we believe that the combination of Northwest and Delta puts the combined airline on a much stronger footing, and as a result of the synergies I mentioned earlier, puts us in a position, even in that world, to potentially earn a profit this year, and thus be much more secure in as an employer and as a service provider than we would have been otherwise. The economic conditions we're facing require us to move with even greater speed to try to capture those synergies and the advantages of the merger. And we're in the process of making critical decisions about the placement of jobs and job functions for areas such as the headquarters for the commuter airlines in the system for Compass, and we're trying to decide exactly what each of our seven hubs will look like. In making those decisions, we're well aware of the concerns of Minnesotans about the potential loss of service as a result of the merger, potential loss of employment, and as a result, we have entered into discussions with the MAC that have produced an agreement which is embodied in a term sheet following a long negotiation at which the MAC staff, very well respected within the industry, conscientiously brought to the table concerns that were expressed to them by their commissioners and by members of the legislature and public, and negotiated hard for those points. And the resulting agreement, I think, is a good agreement for everyone. In it, Delta committed to maintain 10,000 Minnesota jobs for the duration of the bonds and 400 departures a day at our Minneapolis-St. Paul hub for the duration of the bonds and the duration of the lease, which the airport lease runs through 2020. And in good faith, as part of these negotiations, we at Delta came to the table prepared to commit to maintain specific job functions here, and as a result of this agreement, specific job functions will remain. The pilot and flight attendant bases that are now here, reservation center in Chisholm, in the Twin Cities, the pilot training center at NATCO, the technology center in Eagan, and the headquarters of Mesaba Airlines. In addition, we've committed to place other well-paid airline management functions in Minnesota, including the Delta North headquarters, the new headquarters for management of Delta's regional airlines, and to relocate the Compass Airlines headquarters from Virginia to Minnesota. So we're moving some jobs currently in other states to Minnesota, and none of these functions were in the original agreement, and none would be here absent this agreement. We think that the existence of these functions means that not only that existing jobs in those areas of the airline are secure, but when economic conditions improve, then because of the functional commitments that are there, Minnesota is in a position to benefit as those functions prosper. This agreement continues a unique relationship between the airline and the state. No other hub in the Delta system has similar job or flight commitments. The Star Tribune, in writing an editorial about the agreement, concluded that the MAC staff, and this is an independent view, that the MAC staff has negotiated the best possible agreement with the airline. Their headline read, "Don't risk losing Delta Airlines jobs." And it coincided in time with reports of job losses elsewhere in Minnesota. Currently, as Mr. Anderson said, Northwest remains in compliance with our obligations under the agreement. And there is no legal authority on the part of the state or the MAC to require early repayment at this time. However, again, as Mr. Anderson pointed out, the airline's plan is that at some point in the future, probably within 12 to 18 months, when the operating certificates of the two airlines are merged and the airlines can legally merge under rules of the FAA, Northwest will merge into Delta and the headquarters will move to Atlanta. And at that point, absent any other changes, Northwest would be under an obligation within 2 years thereafter to repay the GO-15 bond. At that point, assuming that occurred in 2012, and of course that obligation would pass on to Delta, the repayment amount would be in the range of $168-170 million. As a result of principal payments that will occur between now and then, and taking into account the fact that there's a reserve fund which would also, I think currently have about $50 million, which would be used to defray that payment. The obligations that we are proposing to maintain, current obligations as well, are fully collateralized by assets that are valued and were valued recently in the summer at about 140% of the amounts owed, and they provide substantial security to the MAC and the state as this agreement continues. We believe the agreement is well within the MAC's legal authority, as contained within the enabling legislation from 1991, because it's in the form of a revised remedy for breach and the power to craft a remedy for violations of covenants is, in our view, and in, I think, the view of other lawyers who look at this within the MAC's authority. The remedy, in effect, has been addressed through and enhanced through enhanced flight commitments at the hub, increasing, as we said, from 227 currently to 400 daily departures by the job covenant, by the covenant to maintain specific functions here, which is a new covenant not contained in the existing agreement. And by the fact that Delta has agreed to repay the GO-15 bonds in 2016 as opposed to 2022, as the current schedule provides. As in any negotiation, neither side got everything it wanted, but every point was negotiated carefully, and while there were trade-offs, and while we certainly would have preferred to get some things that we didn't get, I think it's a fair deal. Many people have asked, including yourself, Chairman Atkins, why doesn't Delta just pay off the bonds and sever its ties to the MAC and to Minnesota? And the answer is basically because this would benefit no one. It doesn't benefit the state, the MAC, or the taxpayers, because none of the money that would be paid back would go to the state or the MAC or the taxpayers, unless they happen to be a bondholder. Eliminating the agreement would confer no benefit to the traveling public. It would provide no additional assurances to our employees of continued employment here. So from our perspective, the agreement is good for Delta because it solidifies our ties to the community. And despite the controversy of the existing agreement, My view is that it has been a good agreement for everybody. It's brought brought jobs here and potentially service here that might not otherwise have existed. It's put us in a close relationship, which I think has been helpful. And Delta is sincere in wanting to have a very close relationship and a very committed relationship to this community. And that has been at least part of our motivation in seeking this agreement. The agreement will now be acted on by the Metropolitan Airports Commission on Monday, and we're hopeful that it will be approved because people's lives are on hold waiting to understand where their jobs are going to be located. And as I said earlier, Delta needs to move on with making decisions about the, about job functions and getting on with our end of this business, which is integration. So with that, thank you for your time and attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. Chairman Leader, or Chairman Hornstein has a question, I believe.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thanks to Mr. Hamill, Mr. Anderson, Mr. Hirsch for attending our hearing. I think you see that with this perhaps record turnout of legislators at one hearing, there's tremendous interest among the legislature and the public in what I think Chairman Atkins described as a very, very significant economic development issue for our state. And I had asked this question at a previous hearing that Chair Hillstrom, then Chair Hillstrom of the Local Government Committee, had late this year. And I look at this outsourcing question perhaps as a case study of what could happen here. And I'm very concerned about the jobs covenant. And I want to just get a sense of this agreement. And it could be Mr. Hirsch, Mr. Anderson, anyone who wants to take a crack at this. But you know, it's my understanding that Northwest has most of their call center jobs, for example, stateside, not just in Chisholm or Bloomington, but in other locations, Florida, et cetera. Delta has a lot of their call centers outsourced already to India. So when Mr. Anderson says, well, if there's a decision to outsource on Delta's part, I would say maybe it's not a question of if, it's when. And under this draft agreement, my understanding from the representatives I talked to from the airlines and MAC today is that this jobs covenant will last 3 years or so. And so then what? We have a an agreement on the repayment of the bonds in 2016, but then there's a disconnect. So between 2011 and 2016, we have outstanding obligations, yet these jobs could then be outsourced under this agreement. So in a sense, are we still having a covenant that allows for outsourcing? Am I understanding that correctly? Because I think that we is a real danger, not only in the call centers, but also the flight attendants I've talked to are very concerned. Northwest flight attendants are very concerned also about their jobs potentially being outsourced, that there are private entities that hire other nationals to fly on American carriers. So if you could, anyone on the panel could shed some light on this, because I think this is a very serious concern. And as Mr. Anderson said, if in fact we're using these covenants as leverage, I don't think we have a lot of leverage when we're in fact allowing the outsourcing of jobs in the period of time where these covenants are in effect. So anyone wants to take a crack.
Mr. Chairman, I'm probably in the best.
Is my understanding correct about that?
Yes, sir. The agreement allows a function in Minnesota to be eliminated after the first 3 years only under very limited, very narrow circumstances. And if a function at the airline as a whole is outsourced, and that function is has a an aspect of it is in Minnesota, then that we wouldn't have to maintain that piece of that function here. But there are no plans to outsource any of these functions. There are no discussions that I've heard relating to outsourcing any of these functions. And I can tell you specifically the reservation center in Chisholm is a jewel of our system. They handle our elite customers, and the human capital that is there is very valuable to the airline. And I think the exception here, if you will, is a very, very narrow one, and it's there only because the industry changes frequently and rapidly, and there are risks that the business model that one has to follow competitively may change, and it was to protect against that possible eventuality that provision is in there, not because there's any intention to move in that direction.
Very quickly, thank you, Mr. Harrison. I appreciate your consistency, because this is, I think, pretty much the response you gave me a couple of months ago. But my concern, members, is that there's still wiggle room here. There's a number of ways in which the airline can get out of this, the economic circumstances, others. And I would feel a lot more comfortable, and I don't know if you're willing to commit to this, but I'd feel a lot more comfortable if, in fact, we had in this covenant that we're not going to have outsourcing through the duration of these covenants. No outsourcing till 2016. I wouldn't even want it then. But that would give us a lot more comfort that this public bond, this public trust, can really be enforced. Because, again, members, the statement was there are currently no plans. Well, I want to see on the record that there are no plans to outsource Minnesota jobs in the next 7 or 8 years as a result of this merger. That's what I'd like to see. I'd feel a lot more comfortable with this agreement if we could have an ironclad commitment that there will not be outsourcing of Minnesota flight attendants, Minnesota pilots, reservations agents, and others. So I don't think we're going to get that today, but that's what I would need to feel more comfortable with.
But at least for the term of the bond, at least for the term of the loan. You've been, Ms. Stanek, you desire to add to the answer?
If I would, Mr. Chair, and also Chair Hornstein, I wanted to make a clarification on the point about the res calls in India, and to let you know that Delta's actually gone in the opposite direction with that decision, and all of those voice calls came back to the U.S. call centers on January 1st of this year. So we've actually reversed that decision, and those jobs have come back to the U.S.
And for the record, that was Tammy Lee Stanek. Chair Hornstein, anything further?
Thank you. Well, that's encouraging, but I, again, we would like to see commitments in writing as a part of this covenant that we're not going to have that phenomenon return, that outsourcing phenomenon that Delta was very much engaged in, apparently, up until now.
Yeah, I would, if I could, Mr. Chairman, add one observation, and that is that regardless of any events that might occur following the three-year period, the 10,000 jobs, obligation to maintain 10,000 jobs remains in place. So I personally think that we're dealing with very, very low probability that any of these events are going to occur.
Representative Magus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know if Mr. Hertz or one of the other testifiers could answer a couple questions I have concerning the bonds. And I'd like to know what the interest rate is on the bonds and what the payment schedule is. Is it monthly, yearly, or
Mr. Chairman, the current interest rate, originally it was in the range of 9%, I think, in 1991. And it's now, as I recall, between 6 and 7%. And we make payments, I think, twice a year of about $24 million per payment. But it's about $48 or $50 million a year.
Representative Magnus, second question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a follow-up. If in fact, we do go into breach and enforce this section, I've been looking here, and it said the call date would be 2012, but 2012 to me means January to December. I don't know what month that would be, because I'm trying to figure out how much is at risk here for financially here if the call date is in January or December, or what exactly the date is in 2012, because I'm trying to sort out how much money is at risk here?
The I asked that question actually earlier today, and the answer was if we were to repay the loan on January 1st, 2012, the principal amount would be, and I believe this is correct, $208 million at that point. And we would apply against that sums that are in a reserve account currently. Northwest has posted, I think it's a little under $50 million in a reserve account, in effect paying an advance payment. So the net amount to be paid by Delta in 2012 would be about $168 or $170 million.
Thank you. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question first, actually, for Mr. Hamill or Mr. Anderson, if they might be able to approach, and then...
And we've got a number of other people that want to ask questions as well, so just ask it while they're coming down, will you?
Yeah. Mr. Hamill, Mr. Anderson, I understand that since 2001, that Northwest has not met the job requirements in the covenant and has invoked the force majeure clause. Has the MAC asked for specific statements at any point of the business conditions that have led Northwest to claim the act of God or other acts associated, pressures associated under force majeure clauses? Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, yes, thank you. We did, in fact, ask that this event did not occur until 2003, and we did receive from Northwest the certification that was provided to us and to the state, and I believe this was shared with the legislature, which identifies the specific changed business conditions that basically were the September 11th attacks and the changes in the industry. And just as importantly, for that covenant, the purposes of that covenant, the efforts that Northwest was required to make to use their best efforts to make sure that any reductions would be proportionate to reductions that they were making system-wide. So the covenant, frankly, is very weak in terms of its initial test, which is changed business conditions. That doesn't require much of an effort, and especially as we've heard today, the business conditions seems to change by the moment. But the real heart meat of the covenant is a best efforts requirement that any reductions be proportionate to those made throughout the system. And there, Northwest was very specific in their answer, for example, on the reservation center, noting that while they kept the Chisholm and Twin Cities reservation centers open, they closed reservation centers in New York, Honolulu, Detroit, and Long Beach. So we did receive that type of detail from them.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. And I may not like other portions of the term sheet, but I certainly like the strengthening of force majeure, which is a pretty wide open door, big enough for a truck to drive or even a plane to fly through. I'm going to circle back around. We'll take a question from members, and then if we've got time for a second, we'll do that. Representative Holberg, I appreciate your passing out. I was actually going to ask a question about that myself. Apparently there's discussion of Delta leaving Atlanta. And if Mr. Hurst, if you want, we'll guarantee you we will not build a $1.6 billion expansion of our airport if you'll move your headquarters here. That apparently is the crux of the issue in Atlanta. So, Representative Holberg.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also passed out an editorial from the Star Tribune, and I don't have copies of it, but also there was an article in the Star Tribune today. And my question, by the way, will be for Vice President Hurst if he wants to come to the stand while I'm, quote-unquote, weighing my base here. First of all, it's a very odd day in that I'm going to say I agree with the State Senate and the Star and Tribune editorial board, so I don't know if that will ever happen again in my lifetime.
That's the red letter day.
Maybe for some, but anyway, you know, I think this is kind of a glass half full or glass half empty kind of thing, and I guess I'm in the glass half full mode with this, and that I think that we are going to be able to keep a number of jobs. I think that the MAC has done a good job in renegotiating this. I think that given the conditions of 9/11, et cetera, representing a community that has a lot of Northwest employees and seeing what changes in this industry have done to the situation for families in my district, and then of course the whole building thing on top of it, and with your various articles about where you're at in the discussion in your testimony, Vice President Hirsch, about trying to make decisions now where you're going to locate things, etc. How important is a supportive political environment to making these important decisions on a nationwide basis?
Mr. Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, I actually think it's important. And, you know, the airline business, it's a very complex business and has many aspects that bring it into contact with government. And the fact that everybody's here now is a testament in my mind to the fact that we're providing a public service that has become not, you know, it's not optional, it's a necessity. And that means that we are constantly working with the government. And the government's in a position to affect us in ways that impact our profitability. And if we're not profitable, we can't provide the service that people are depending on, and we can't provide jobs for our employees. And so to have a good relationship, in our view, in all our hubs, not just Minnesota, is very important in maintaining the viability of the airline and providing the service that we provide to the public. So I have to say that maybe I'll be potentially disappointed about this, but I like to think that these agreements that we're talking about here, and that ones that have existed to date and the one that hopefully will continue, will continue to provide a basis for having a healthy relationship, which doesn't mean that you can't disagree with each other about issues, but it allows you to do it in a civil way and hopefully in a way that is beneficial to the public.
Well, and just in closing, I appreciate that, and I appreciate the concessions that you've made and your willingness to keep a number of jobs here. I know that Minnesota isn't the most cost-effective place to conduct business, and in closing, I see in one of the articles that you'll have some people moving from Virginia to Minnesota, and Lakeville's a great place to live.
Right. The local Chamber of Commerce representative is also Mr. Hirsch, that you've got nearly 40% of the Minnesota House here, that we don't have to show up for committees. This is an excellent turnout. I think you get the message that we really do care about this situation.
We absolutely do, and I'll pass that on.
And that Atkins wasn't a jerk. He may not necessarily like the deal, but he wasn't a jerk. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and other chairs and members. I work in this industry, and I really want to thank you all for having this hearing. I think this industry is so vital to the state of Minnesota, the airline business and the global world that we live in now. And, at first I was a little leery, but I think it's good to have a discussion and bring to light how important this industry is for Minnesota as we are in a more and more competitive world. Yesterday I happened to watch the Senate hearing, and one of the things that I got out of that I thought was really interesting is it talks about these bonds and the risk that Minnesota has, these $245 or $270 million or whatever it is, but when you talk about the regional impact of the airport and what it means to Minnesota, and maybe you can say the number, but the number I heard was $10 to $11 billion impact each year to Minnesota from this airport. And granted, if Northwest isn't here or Delta, I mean, we'd still have airline service, but it certainly would be different. And I just want to tell a quick story. I worked out there, and on September 11th, after that, it was the most amazing thing. And I just think as leaders of Minnesota, we don't want to ever live that again. It was a horrible event, but when you think of how that airport was, and it was a ghost town, and just the impact for our state. And that just scares me as commerce and leaders, you know, from 3M and Medtronic and other companies move around, and you know, that isn't available, that we're not a global mover, you know, that it would be like a ghost town. I have one question. Since I do have an opportunity with Mr. Hurst here, I just can't help but ask.
You can ask for a raise.
Right here on the record, perhaps. Ladies and gentlemen.
Whatever you want.
Congratulations on your new job, by the way. How's that for...
Billy, you can just give me the 5% commission.
Okay, thank you.
Well, change we can believe in.
Well, you have a, you know, you've got a good airport. I'm going to pass this photo around, and, you know, I think we like to kick Mac around, but the other day I was out there, and, you know, we had a big snow event, and it's amazing what they do, and you can see the plow trucks. It's one of the most impressive things I've ever seen in my life is the plow trucks moving through, and they've got, like, about 20 of them, and they just can clean out a whole runway in one sweep, and, you know, that's what you're getting, Mr. Hurst, with Minnesota. You're getting a great airport.
Right.
You're getting some great employees that are well-educated, that we've all invested in a good education system, and they're going to show up and work hard for you. And I'm just a little concerned, you know, as we move forward, just please know that all, you know, there's 10,000 jobs, and I appreciate that, but not all jobs are created equal. So please be respectful that, you know, hopefully they're, you know, decent jobs, and I hope you can live up to that.
I can promise you they will be. And we share your view of Minnesota work ethics, believe me. The reason that the Chisholm Reservation Center is in Chisholm is because we believe that we'd be able to hire people who have a work ethic that would really sustain that facility, and it has.
Are they the one that put me in the middle seat all the time next to snoring Frank here? Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And from Mr. Hurst, one of the things that I'm most concerned about is the change in business conditions in the airline industry in general. And I know just anecdotally, I haven't had a chance to follow up with a specific individual, but I know from several people that Northwest has had a couple of folks on staff who've been looking at literally stripping ounces off of planes, resulting in savings of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in fuel savings over the years. The Business Journal article talks about the cost of oil, projecting just a $50 a barrel cost when, you know, even if we have the hint of a recovery at all, we're going to be in the $7,500 and $125 a barrel. We no longer, well, even the state budget forecast is now built around $90 to $95 a barrel. And I think that's undercounting. And yet, as the chair of the Green Jobs Task Force and wanting to help build an innovation economy again in Minnesota, we need to have those nonstop flights internationally. We need to be this regional hub. And I think the Northwest has made that commitment to looking at least on the efficiency side. But I'm wondering if you can talk about some of the innovation and a commitment. I'm a little bit afraid of this 3 years suggesting that that's when the bottom falls out. And I want assurances that Northwest and Delta are building a business model that can compete in the next decade and the decade after, and that if the bottom falls out and oil prices go back up to what a real cost may be, that we're not going to see the 10,000 jobs become 5,000 jobs or 3,000 jobs.
Well, Mr. Hurst, if you can address that relatively briefly, I've got two more members that I definitely want to get to between now and 6 when the next committee comes in.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you know, I'd like those assurances as well. It is a volatile business, and there are risks of unanticipated events. We've been very aggressively hedging with oil in the 30s and the 40s against the possibility of rise, and so hopefully we'll protect ourselves to some degree. If oil gets up in the $100 range again, it will have impact, and I don't think anybody can make promises that it won't.
Chairman Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Hirsch, and I don't know if this is a question for, because I too know a little bit about tough negotiations from my job when I'm out in the legislature, and and work in an industry that's suffering right now and has the mood swings in employment and unemployment. But as I look down the table here at the Representative Hausman, chair of the Capital Investment Committee, and as you were talking about the bonds, the question I have is what could this do to our bond rating? I mean, Minnesota's bond rating, we back these bonds for major corporations. If they can turn around and walk away from them, and we're looking at increasing the level of bonding or possibly increasing the level of bonding we do in the state to try and spur and get some job growth, are we going to be looking at ourselves at having a higher cost for those bonds if our own bond rating goes down? And this is a concern. I don't know if you're the one to answer the question or if there's anybody here that can.
Mr. Harris, if you want to take a swing at it.
I'm probably not the one to answer that question, but I don't believe that this agreement would have a negative impact on state bond ratings because the bonds aren't going into default, and that would be that could be an impact. But Northwest has made payments on the bonds regularly, never missed a payment, even in bankruptcy, paid over I think $300 million in interest in the course of the life of the bonds. So I actually think this experience has probably been a positive for the state bond rating.
Representative Health.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine is just a comment to the chairs that are gathered here, and that is I've just been listening, and I do hear this sort of suggestion that few things are ironclad and that the bottom could drop out in 3 years. I think that's at least one thing I heard. And I think what it tells me, what I learned from today, is we have an obligation as policymakers for our economic security of our state to plan for alternatives. We can't depend on one industry. And we have got to be thinking seriously about rail connections across this country, connecting regional cities, so that we have alternatives if the bottom drops out. The trusting one industry is a little scary.
Thank you, Representative Halston. Is there anyone else that has questions? Otherwise, we're actually going to finish up a little bit early. My goal in having this hearing, and I think it's shared by the other chairs, was we didn't expect this to necessarily be the end, but perhaps the beginning of at least getting an overview. I appreciate the attendance of all the members in coming here. There is a question of whether or not this will require full legislative approval or not. Peter Watson, Senate counsel, has weighed in on what conditions would trigger that. And we can share that information as well with you. It will depend on what the final agreement looks like. And I see nodding from Mr. Hamill. So you all may get another whack at this on the full House floor. But I would certainly urge on behalf of everybody that we do our darndest to work out the best agreement that we can. I will applaud the efforts that have been made even in the past several days to whether you call it clarification, modification, or material change. Some of the terms that were somewhat weak before have been strengthened considerably, and I appreciate that. I don't know that I still like the deal or that I like the deal yet, but that may well give us we may get a second chance at that if it comes before the legislature. Thank you for everyone's attendance today. Thank you for Delta Northwest, for Mac, and for Mr. Bender's presentation. We're adjourned.